Asher bachar banu mikol hamim v'natan lanu et torato baruch ata Adonai notein haTorah. Amen. This week's Parsha is Parsha Emor, and instead of turning to the very beginning of it, we're going to begin on page 684 at the bottom, because this week's Parsha talks about the counting of the Omer. So, of course, it's a wonderful time to talk about that, since we are actually in the Omer, and it's not all the time, as we've noticed over the years, it's not all the time that what's going on in the holiday season or the holiday cycles is necessarily what we're reading in the Torah. But at this point of time, it is. So it's very good that this is where we are. So Parsha Emor on page 685, we'll be entering into the Omer in just a moment. One other thing to mention is that we know that in the Torah that the names of the months, that there are no names, that they're only numbers. It'll say like Rosh Hashanah is on the first day of the seventh month, Yom Kippur is the 10th day of the seventh month, Pesach, 15th day of the first month. All of the months have numbers, ordinal numbers, but they don't have any names. There is an exception to that, which is later in Tanakh, in the rest of the Bible, the month of Iyar has a name. And it's kind of interesting because Iyar kind of gets, when I hear Iyar, I think Eeyore. I don't know, it just kind of seems like it's the month that's kind of neither here nor there. It wasn't Nisan for Pesach, and it's not Sivan for Shavuos. It's just kind of hanging there in the center. And yet we see that plays a very important role in our lives, as well as in the count that we're going to be involved with in counting the Omer, going from Pesach to Shavuot, that the entire month has a holiday, that even though the holiday, the spiritual light of a holiday, always kind of emblazons the entire month, it makes a difference the fact that we have the month of Iyar, where every single day of Iyar is involved in the sphere account, and this is all called Chol HaMoed. It's equivalent to the intermediate days of the festival. So normally, like even though this year we had very little Chol HaMoed of Pesach, by the time we got done with the first two Seders, then it was Thursday, and then it was Friday going into Shabbos, and then we went into Yom Tov for the concluding days. So we had very little Chol HaMoed, and the Chol HaMoed isn't just here's the Yom Tov, and then we go down to Chol HaMoed, and then we go back up to the Yom Tov. The goal is to have more Moed than Chol. Moed means festival. Chol means ordinary. So some people are more Chol HaMoed, and some people are more Chol HaMoed. So it depends on where you put the accent on which syllable of what we're trying to do with that time. But the intermediate days of Chol HaMoed, of a festival, have a festive feel to it, and the time between Pesach and Shavuot, the entire month of Iyar, the entire 49 days, are considered like Chol HaMoed. So the truth is that Iyar is a very spectacular month in its own quiet way, because we're not physically doing the same type of work we did for Pesach, and we're not going to have the cheesecake like we're going to have for Shavuos and Blintzes, but that there's a lot going on. The name of the month that is given to the month of Iyar is Ziv. And the word Ziv means to shine or to radiate. And it's talking about the radiance of what we gained at the holiday of Pesach. We're trying to stay and keep the shine and keep the radiance of what we learned and what we benefited from and all the inspiration and insights that we gained from our Seders and from Pesach. We're trying to keep that going and connected to our ultimate destination, which is to get to Mount Sinai and to get to the giving of the Torah. So this month has an actual name. So it's called Chodesh Ziv. And that this is the month of radiance. I think if Iyar would get more attention if it was called the radiant month. People would at least ask the question of like, what's so radiant about it? I hadn't really noticed anything happening. But that's what we're trying to do. So, excuse me, the radiance is being transferred in a way that the gift of radiance that was given to us at the Seder, the Seder night, the spiritual light that was given to the Jewish people when they left Egypt is the same spiritual light that's available to us at our Seder. But then the question is, how do you hang on to radiance? You know, like how do you capture that? What do you do with that? The only way to capture it is to internalize it and then have it go out from ourselves. So during this time of counting the Omer, that we're working on, What are we working on? We're working on self-improvement. We're working on making ourselves better people, more luminous people, more radiant people, so that the radiance from Pesach becomes not only something that was given down to us that we received, but that we take in and then radiate out ourselves. So that's the whole process that we're involved in with the month of Iyar. By the time we get to Rosh Chodesh Sivan, which will be the beginning of preparing for Shavuot, we're already in arriving at Mount Sinai, getting ready for Shavuot. We've kind of transitioned a little bit. We're still in the count, but we're in a transition time. So it's really the month of Iyar that brings us this radiance as we try to internalize it. So there's a nice kind of gematria, numerical thing, about, about this, what we're working on, is for those, how many people are involved in counting the Omer in some way? People are doing it in some way? Okay, so we know we've all been working on the different sefirot, the different personality qualities. This month, right today, we are on the 16th day of the counting of the Omer, and so that means that we're in the third week. We're 2 weeks plus days, 2 weeks plus 2 days, and have to kind of do that higher level math there. And that's going to be important. We'll talk about why we do days and weeks. It's like, why not one or the other? Why do we have to do both? And that we are in the sphera, the quality of Tiferet. The quality of Tiferet is about harmony, balance, beauty, of things being in a place of equilibrium, calm, etc. We'll talk about what that means more about that. And specifically, we're looking at the attribute of Gevura, of restraint, definition, withholding in creating balance. And we'll talk about that as well. But all of these things, Erica.
If this doesn't sidetrack you, so in that the names are not given except for this month, where did the names come from?
Excellent question. They're all Babylonian. Very good question. And the question always like, since when are we incorporating Babylonian things into anything we do? So, you know, I heard an explanation recently, but now I don't remember exactly what it was. It has something to do about remembering that we are in exile with, and maybe at some point it will go back to the numbers, just the same way we have the days of the week are numbers as well, except for Shabbos. So great question. But yeah, they're all Babylonian. And the only, though we still draw insights into it, like for example, the month of Nisan, is, which is a Babylonian word, I don't even know what it means, but it has the word nes in it, which means miracle. So it is the month of miracles of the Exodus from Egypt. And we have the month of Av, which means father, and that's the month of the destruction of both temples. So we still draw insights from them, but they're Babylonian names. So great question. So except for our, and so we have our Ziv month of Iyar now. So each of these qualities that we're working on are called midos, midah. So a midah literally means to measure. It means a measurement. And what we're doing in this process of growth and spiritual advancement is that we're looking to figure out what the correct recipe is of what measure we need of each quality and how it interacts in any given situation. So for example, if we were in the midah of chesed, of giving or loving kindness. So that has to be weighed and measured in different circumstances. The amount of loving kindness that I give to my husband or my child or to my mother or to my friend is going to be different depending on the relationship. So a person just says, I just kiss and hug everybody. It's like, well, that's not necessarily a really good idea. It's like, who? In what circumstances? So it has to be based on what the definition is. So there has to be a chesed with a measure of gevura. So it's just like baking. You can't just say, you know, I love flowers, I'm just going to put the whole bag of flour in and just hope for the best. Like, that's interesting, but you're not going to get what you want. There's going to be a different recipe for challah, cake, brownies, pancakes, whatever. Now I'm going to get hungry. So there's going to be a different measure for all of that because you're trying to get a different result. Life is knowing what are you trying to achieve and what is the measure that you therefore need of whatever that quality is. So what's interesting is midah, the word midah, has the numerical equivalent of 49. So the mem is equal to 40. Dalid is equal to 4, and the hay is equal to 5. So during this 49-day period that we're involved with in counting, we are working on our midos, which is the plural of that of the midah, of which midah we want. It's a 49 process. It's a 49 concept that we're involved with. So that's just kind of a little interesting gematria thing about what we're doing with these midos and what we're trying to achieve. Do you mind closing that door? I hear the lovely sound of sweet children, but it's hard. Okay. When we are doing this, so we are going off of the commandment that the Torah has, which we're going to take a look at right now, which is the counting of the Omer. And let's take a look on page 685, and let's take a look here, verse 15. And it's verse 15 and 16, so that's what we want to take a look at. All right. Rachel, would you like to read that for us, verses 15 and 16 on page 685?
You shall count for yourselves from the morrow of the rest day, from the day when you bring the omer of the waiting. 7 weeks you shall be complete. Until the morrow of the seventh week you shall count 50 days. You shall offer a new meal offering to Hashem.
Okay. This is the source that tells us that we're going to be counting both days and weeks, that we're going to count 50 days, and that 50th day is the holiday of Shavuot, of giving the Torah, and we're also counting 7 weeks, 7 complete weeks. So it's interesting, the holiday of Shavuot is one of those holidays, unlike Shabbos, that you can bring in early, like if you want to start Shabbos early, you can. You can't start the holiday of Shavuot early because it says 7 complete weeks, which means until Havdalah time, the end of the 49th day, until it becomes the 50th. So that's one holiday that we don't start early because we have to complete those weeks like it tells us right here. So the question is, why days and weeks? There's so many different ways of looking at it. So what I learned today was from a shiur by Rebbetzin Esther Wien, and she was quoting Rabbi Moshe Shapiro. So that's where this primarily comes from. So it comes from the idea of looking at the word, first of all, sfirat, of counting, of what that means. So a mispar is a number from the word. The root is samach fe resh. So that sefer, sfira, all of those mispar, they all have the same root. And so that's the word is to count. So that's what we're doing is we're counting. But it's also the same word as a sefer, which is a book. So a book isn't a count. A book is something else. So we have things that are counted, and then we have something that's called a sefer. So if somebody asks you, well, what is a book? What would you say? What is a book? If I'd never heard of what a book is, what would you say a book was? It's a group of pages? Random pages?
It's a group in order.
In order?
In order.
And?
Containing words.
Containing words that?
That tell a story.
That tell a story or have information that has some sort of a unified concept, right? Okay, so there's different ways of counting. You can count things as disparate things. One, two, you know, there's, you know, one wall, two pictures, three, you know, it's like, that doesn't tell me anything. Or I can say, I'm going to tell you about the room. And the room has in it all of these elements. And the room, the sum total is greater than, I'm sorry, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. If I just said to you, desk, chairs, photograph, pitcher of water, coffee, photographs, candle. I mean, unless you'd been here, you'd say, what are you trying to tell me? Okay, so I can tell you things, we can list things and we can count things and enumerate something, and it can be very discrete items, and or it can be unified into telling a story and creating a whole. So that's what we're doing on Sfirat HaOmer, is that we are looking at individual parts by looking at each day as a standalone, and we are putting it in the context of a whole, which is why the counting of the Omer also has the unique feature that if you miss a day of counting, of saying with saying the blessing, you can continue counting the days and saying the days and the weeks, but you can't make the blessing on it because the blessing is on the whole 49-day period that has to be connected together because it's a whole story. So we still would be involved in saying how many days. We would say today is 16 days, which are 2 weeks and 2 days. So we can still do that, but the blessing cannot be included because of this concept that we're trying to put together a whole story. So the question is, why are we trying to do that? So if we're trying to work on ourselves, the truth is that our own personal challenge often is that our mitos are kind of all over the place, that we act one way in one place and another way in another place, and not because the circumstances warrant it, it's just that we're fragmented. And being fragmented and not having a unified sense of who we are is what can cause us to have a fragmented spiritual existence. Our goal is to try to create as much consistency in who we are, wherever we are, as possible. Nobody ever reaches 100% consistency. I mean, it's interesting with this whole thing, which I didn't even read what it was with, what's his name from the saying, who was recorded saying all of the... Sterling. I hate the fact that his last name is Sterling, when it's such a base thing that he did. But some people are making a difference. Like, well, he said it in private. It's like, okay, well, we don't really make such a big distinction between that, necessarily. It's like, we say a prayer every morning that says that I should be God-fearing in public as well as private. There should not be a difference in what I'm doing privately versus publicly. For most of us, there is. It's like, well, I'm out of town, it's the weekend, it's whatever. So we have like a little criteria of boxes that we create where we can kind of do what we want to do. So everyone does that in one way or another. But the goal is to create a sefer, to create a counting that puts together in a collection that takes all of the mitos, each of the qualities, and has them in balance and incorporated into something. That idea is the root of the word to become a gadol. So the word gadol, does anybody recognize that word? What does gadol usually mean?
Big.
Big, okay, big. Gadol means big. So it means, that's what I always thought it meant, big or great. But it also, it's interesting, the root of that word, the root of the word gadol is a two-letter root, and it's gad, gimel, dalet. And that root means specifically a unit, a troop, something that's unified to work in concert towards a specific goal. So you might recognize that root in the word Aguda Yisrael. And Aguda is a gathering, a chain, it's something that's gathered together. Agudat Yisrael is one of the religious parties in Israel. So Aguda Achat is a description of the Jewish people, that we should form ourselves into an Aguda Achat, that we should be as a unified collective group of the Jewish people with all one purpose and one focus. So the root of the word Gadol is this word Gad, which means to be unified. It says that's what it means to be a great person. That's why it means that even though we use it to be big in stature, in physical height or width or whatever it is, the true nature of being a gadol, of someone who grows up and becomes mature, as opposed to a katan, who is a immature person, whether they are chronologically youthful or not. You can say they're a real katan, meaning they're little, means like they are not a gadol, they have not become a unified person. So our goal is to go from Pesach, which we are described as a katan then, that we were completely the recipients, our Seder, that first Seder in Egypt, we sat in our houses, God's like, sit in your house and don't open the door, I'm doing this, you are just merely recipients of everything. But that's a good way to start, but we can't stay that way. Be the same way as if a child, of course, a child, a baby, is only a recipient of everything the parents and whoever is taking care of them is doing for them. But if they stay like that and they're 30 years old and they're like, feed me, change me, whatever, he's like, grow up. So what does it mean to be grown up? It's like, get yourself together and grow up into something that is greater than what you started as. So our goal, kind of the same idea of the Ziv, of we received radiance, but now it's our goal to grow with it so that we can illuminate it back and reflect it back. That's called becoming a gadol. So that idea is what we're trying to become, is gadol for ourselves. Interestingly, the Jewish people, if we go back, and I went through and did a thing for these computer searches, I could go through and count all the number of places I could find it, that the Jewish people are, that's the, one of the very first promises that God makes to Abraham, is that we will be a goy gadol. We will be a great nation. So people look around and say, well, there aren't too many of us, so we certainly didn't mean in quantity. And other people say, oh, but we're great people, you know, we're important people. So that's one That's also true. But the promise that we'll be a goy gadol, we're going to be a goy gadol, we're going to be a goy gadol, it keeps being referred to over and over and over again throughout our history. It says, what does that mean? That means the similar idea of being unified where everything is working together. That is the nature of the Jewish people. It's not only a promise in the future you will be a goy gadol, it's saying you are a goy gadol. You are a nation, not of disparate parts. It's not just this person, this person, this person, this person, and this person. You are a nation where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. The Jewish people are greater than the sum of its parts. Now you could say, well, any group is like that. Other groups have to work to be like that. You have to have something. What we're being told is the Jewish people are by nature that. We are really just one entity that is unified, and that's why when we don't act in a unified way, it's not only unpleasant and counterproductive, it goes against the very nature of who we are. Because we are a goy gadol. We are a nation that has been unified, that has been brought together for a single purpose. So then here, this was also just a fascinating image to myself, to me, that Rebbetzin Wine pointed out. She said that this also exists in time as well as currently right now, that we are a goy gadol right here, all of us who are in existence, the Jewish people, right now. But if you remember when the Jewish people are receiving Torah, that God says, I'm making this covenant with you, all of you who are here today and not here today, in the future as well. So we are this goy gadol, this connected, unified group that is working together to go to a certain destination. That's throughout time as well as right today on May 1st, 2014. So she gave us an example. Said, if you see a picture of yourself when you were 5 years old, and you point to it, you would say, that's me. That's a picture of me when I was five. Now, the reality is, how many of the cells that you had when you were five are still in your body right now?
None.
So that's not you. It's like, well, yes, it is. So, but it's still me. Says, that is when we hear that we should realize that we were the ones who were taken out of the land of Egypt. It's not just like, oh, I'll try to pretend like I was that. That's the same thing as pointing to ourselves. Instead of saying, this is me when I was five, say, this is me in the year, whatever it was. This is me 2,236 years ago, or this is what I look like. It's like, really? It's no different. It says, that's the goy gadol. It is us. We're just new cells of the exact same being called this goy gadol, this Am Yisrael, this Jewish people. And that's how God created us, and it is indestructible. But just like a body, like, you know, I will slough off cells and there will not be the same cells all the time, but my existence is a unified whole. I didn't go away. That's the same thing with the Jewish people, is that we are, that is the eternal entity of the Jewish people. That's what we're trying to wrap our minds around, basically, during this counting of the Omer and taking ourselves from the vision, the realization, the inspiration that we received at Pesach, and taking that into a reality communally and also spiritually for us and personally. Of what do I need to do then to be the best cell of this body that is called this Goy Gadol, this Goy Kadosh, this holy nation that is the Jewish people. Unless we think, well, cell sounds like you, that sounds even more minimal than a cog in a wheel. But the difference is that that's why we go and we count days and weeks. Because what does counting days mean? Days means day one, day two, day three, day four. And it has its own beauty by itself, as each individual person has their own beauty, their own uniqueness, their own contribution, their own greatness is by themselves. But if it only stays as a count of days and doesn't get aggregated into a count of weeks, because a week is what you do with the days. So then you take your days and then you say, this day, that's 16 days, great, it's the 16th day of the Omer. If I don't then also say, which is 2 weeks and 2 days that I am trying to get this all together. It is the duality which is represented in this count of what we're trying to do. See the uniqueness of the individual. A cell is not an incidental thing. It's not a minor deal. That's very important. And it also has to be put together into this combination, into this package that's called the package of weeks. So that's what we are counting when we go together. And why those weeks must be complete before we get to Shavuot. You can say, you know, I did 48 days and, you know, lots of hours towards the 49th day. It's like, don't leave the week incomplete, because we understand that the nature of seven in and of itself, that we're counting these weeks, is all about something being brought together in wholeness. That's what our week is about. That's what Shabbat is about. We have our 6 days, which we're counting, but if it doesn't end up in the basket called Shabbat, where it's the seventh day that's holding the whole thing together, then we just had 6 days. So the same thing is true in the realm of personal development, is that we can have all sorts of different qualities about ourselves and say, you know, this is who I am. I came into this world. These are my qualities. It's like, that's great. And if it doesn't get put together into a package that works and interacts in an appropriate way, then it's not really worth so much. It's going to fall apart and be counterproductive, and it's going to be destructive. So that's our goal of what we're trying to do during this whole period of time. So you can see that we have many layers of this, that this is working on the communal level. It's working throughout time. It's working on me as an individual spiritually, as well as myself personally in my own personal development. One of the other ideas about the counting of the Omer is the idea of expansiveness. So the barley is one of those grains. If you've ever cooked barley, what happens to barley when you cook it? It expands. I mean, all grains do, but barley, I think, must top the list as far as I've seen in any recipes. Somebody told me they were making something and that they needed a cup of barley, but she didn't see that it was a cup of barley after it was cooked or something, so she put in a cup of barley, and then she ended up, you know, like her pot, you know, overflowing. So it was like, oh, I guess that wasn't really what I needed. So barley expands, since that is the nature of the expansiveness that we're also looking at, and that has to do with also the concept of 49, that we're not just taking 1 week, we're taking 7 times 7, which is the maximum we can do in the physical world. The maximum is 7 times 7. Our world is oriented towards 7. How do we understand this? Well, number one, we have the concept in time that the amount of time that we have for creation was a 7-day period. So 6 days plus the 1 day of Shabbos is a 7-day package. So that's the dimension of time that human beings live, that we live in. Then in the realm of space, we also have what's called 7. We have all the directions, the 6 directions that we have, up and down, front and back, let's see, north, south, east, west, up and down, so that's 6 directions that we have, and we stand in the center, we're the 7th point. Just like Shabbos stands at the center of the week, we stand in the dimension of space. That's why when we shake our lulav in all the different directions, it goes around us. We don't take ourselves outside of the cube that we are making with how we're shaking the lulav. So we do it north, south, east, west, up and down with us in the center. This is called the dimension of 7 as well. This cube, 6 plus us in the center is 7. Time is in the dimension of 6 days of the week plus Shabbos is 7. So it says those are the limitations we have. However, what we're told is that's what we use to get us through the process. That's how we get to a place of transcendence, is by using the physical properties of time and space. All of the mitzvahs that we have either use things like in space or use time. Everything is about time and space. But then we're going to go to the dimension called 50. And 50 is already in the dimension. That would really be the beginning of the 8th week. And 8 is always about transcendence, of going beyond nature. That's the realm of miraculous. It says that's a gift to us. We put in the effort to go through what we can do in time and space. So you take if you were doing a mathematical equation, you would say time times space would be 7 times 7, gets us to 49. I can get myself to 49. We make no blessing on the 50th day, because I'm not doing anything on that 50th day. That's what I receive as a result of the effort that I went put in time and in space. Because somebody said, can't you just count all the days like up front? You know, just say, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's like, no, we actually have to pass through each day. You can't count a day that you're not in. And you can't go back and count a day that you were in. And you can't pre-count it. You can't post-date your check. You can't pre-date your check. You can only do the day that you're in. So we use these boundaries in such a strange way, because we're using these boundaries and these limitations that we have in time and space to go through a process that in the end is going to take us to a place that transcends time and space, which is called standing at Mount Sinai, which was a transcendent time that goes on and on, which is why you never see on any shul announcements that I've ever seen. We're now celebrating the whatever anniversary it is of receiving the Torah. Wouldn't you think we would put a number on there? We received, I don't know when it was. It was whatever. I remember those numbers from before for the Exodus. I already forgot what it was. So we don't, it's irrelevant. The date is irrelevant because standing at Sinai was not within the boundary of time. And we were there. We were just reconstituted cells. It was just looking at myself. That's me standing at Mount Sinai. So Jewish people have as a joke that they say when they meet somebody, and after you play your Jewish geography and you're trying to figure out where do I know you from, then when you can't figure it out, you say, must have been at Sinai. Okay? Must have seen you at Sinai. And now they have the dating site that also saw you at Sinai, which means that we have this connection. Like, I was there, I just didn't recognize you. So that's the standing at Sinai experience, which is the transcendent experience. So we're going to use this limitation of time and space and these concepts to take ourselves to the next level, and that's going to be to take us to Shavuot. Patricia, look, I had a question.
I'm just thinking about Shavuot, and I know the idea of eating dairy and flowers and stuff, but it seems like it should be like this amazing, major
holiday
celebration.
It is.
But like, oh,
it is.
Well, no, wait, no, wait. Yeah, but it just seems there should be more emphasis on it.
Depends where you are. There is. I mean, Shavuos has a PR problem that has a lot to do with the Sunday school calendar that we all grew up with. Because sometimes it's in June, like this year, which would be after Sunday school ends, like on May 30th or whenever they end it. And so it's outside of the curriculum. So, but it's not outside of the Jewish curriculum. The Jewish curriculum, it's a pilgrimage festival. It is right up there with Pesach and Sukkot, and it's the whole purpose of the Exodus from Egypt to begin with. So, yes, it is a very big deal.
Thing you were telling us last week about celebrating the seventh day of
Pesach, right?
Like not missing.
Yeah, it's also a very big deal. A very big deal. So, again, some of these things have kind of fallen through the PR cracks. And it depends, again, on the community. But, yeah, Shavuos is a very big deal, which is why we stay up all night the night before. We are so excited for it. And it says that even if you're falling on your face, to stay up, because it means that you're showing your enthusiasm. Erica.
But to Patricia's point, I mean, everyone says, what are you doing for Pesach?
Uh-huh.
Nobody says, what are you doing for Shavuos? I
know.
Nobody,
yes, no.
Certainly not at that magnitude.
Okay, you are right.
So is that contributed to, in North America, because of the non-religious popular sects of Judaism that don't subscribe to the whole Sinai experience, maybe?
That may be part of it as well, and part of it that it's like you're saying. So again, look at what that actually makes our point. If you compare the effort that goes into preparing for Pesach to the effort that goes into preparing for Shavuos, what do you do to get ready for Shavuos? I mean, people joke. They lock their meat cabinets and they get out their dairy things. And it's really hard because that's the only time that people make a yuntif meal that's dairy. And some people don't even, they only make one yuntif meal that's dairy and then they make the rest fleishik. So other than cooking the meal, quote, other than cooking the meal, going to shul, staying up all night, there's not a preparation. And that is actually saying exactly what we're saying, which is once you have the shift in work, so if we were to wait it, Passover, Pesach preparation, while it should be intensely spiritual and preparing as well, let's face it, The bulk of our time and effort and energy is going into physical preparation for Pesach. That dramatically shifts. Like, during Pesach, there's less and less work done as you're feasting on your leftovers from your Seder. Okay? So you get to the seventh day, and we talked about last week, most people are thinking about, when can I start eating chametz? Okay? So it's already kind of shifting. Then we get into Sfirat HaOmer, the counting of the Omer. What does that mostly require? Mental attention. It's like, nobody forgot to make Pesach. By the second night of counting the Omer, we almost forgot to count. It's like, I can't believe it, you know? It's just because I moved my counter, like, 3 inches back on my dresser instead of right in my face, I almost forgot it. So counting the Omer requires mental attention, spiritual attention, no physical work except turning your little thing if you have a counter, nothing. And then you get to Shavuos, and what do you need? Nothing. You don't need physical work really to prepare, and the spiritual work, you did. And in fact, you can be half asleep, staying up, and, you know, falling on your face, and that's okay too. So that's part of it also, is that it almost, it's like essence of Yentif. There's, it's so ephemeral that if somebody was just looking at it like, well, what do we do? You would say, well, we're not really doing anything. We're basking. And that's a hard thing. And then it became, for a lot of shuls, that became then confirmation or consecration or some sort of thing that was done, and then people talk about having blintzes, you know, that as a joke, but it's in a way it's like, well, we gotta do something with this holiday, so what should we do? And that's how it falls off the table. But it's because of the unique nature of it, of exactly what we're saying, that by that time we have transcended into, we're not in the realm of space or time, we're at the level of eight. We just transcended. It's like we got beamed up to a new place. And if you don't know you got beamed up, then you would say, there's nothing going on. I'm like, well, that's what it looks like from the outside. But that's not what's really happening. So we're standing at Sinai. There couldn't be anything more profound than that. Beth Ann.
I sometimes think of Shavuos as like getting married.
It is.
You're that's dressed and you're fancy and you get the preparations all done. And really your job is to stand there and say, I do.
You, that's great. That's great. And Shavuos is, the Shavuos is the wedding. The preparations have been all done. And you're standing under the chuppah. It's like, well, what are you doing? And I don't see anything happening. It's like, you're getting married. That's what's happening.
Your whole soul is changing.
What was that?
Your whole soul is changing.
Yeah, right. You are being recreated. In fact, we know that at a chuppah, that's why it's considered a very auspicious time to pray. The bride and groom are considered a recreation of Adam and Chava. And it's an auspicious time to pray for everybody who is at the wedding that we are witnessing a recreation. You say, well, I just saw two people standing under there. If you didn't know anything about weddings and you just showed up and you saw two people just standing together under a chuppah, you would say, well, what's happening? It's like, oh, they're getting married. It's like, but nothing seems to be happening. It's like, they're getting married. So it says that's the Jewish people. And people do decorate the shuls, oftentimes in white flowers and things to convey a wedding. Because it says that Mount Sinai sprouted flowers at the giving of Torah, like for the chuppah, for the Jewish people to come to the chuppah, and that Moshe brought the Jewish people as the bride to come to the mountain, to come to receive their ketuvah, which is the Torah. So the engagement and the proposal was in Egypt, like, are you willing to follow me in this relationship? And then we had a very quick engagement, actually, 49 days engagement, and then the wedding at Har Sinai. So it is a wedding, and the same thing is happening as we're being brought into the relationship. The groom is God, and the Torah is our ketubah, and we are the bride. And that's why a man, when he's putting on his tefillin, he becomes a woman. The recipient, Eras Tichli, I betrothed you to me, and he's receiving the ring, really, of binding himself to God. Okay.
As I read, you know, when you read further and you see that, when we were in the wilderness, we were actually instructed to bring offerings. And so there was a little more physical activity at that time. We're not there physically, but I believe that we can make it more than just a mental exercise by not just saying the blessing and counting the days, but then going in and maybe searching ourselves and writing or doing a little more physical activity of how can I make this appear that I am really changing and growing. From the 49 low steps that I was when I left Egypt up to that 50th level where I needed to.
Absolutely.
I believe we have an opportunity to make it more than just a mental thing, but to put some physical activity.
That's true. So, and I probably may overstated that it was mental rather than physical. I meant in keeping track.
Yeah,
it's not keeping the days is like counting. And the truth is, the offering was only done on the first day. There was only one day of offering, and then the rest of the time was counting. Okay, so we're counting, but the offering was only one day offering. And so it's like, well, so what were they doing? Even with the temple, it's a one-day offering. And then we're expanding that day to turn it in, taking that barley offering and expanding it. And letting it grow in us. We take something very basic. It says that even though I love good barley soup, it says barley is considered animal feed. It says that we take barley and we let it expand. And by Shavuos, then we have a wheat offering. And we have it's one of the only times that we offer leavened bread. Okay, it was taken on Shavuos. It says that we went from animal to wheat, which is considered human food. A nice, fresh, full loaf of bread. That's for a person. Even if your pet wants it, they're actually not supposed to have it. But barley is considered for animal fodder. So what Kay is saying is, I think, which has led beautifully to things you can subscribe and get email reminders of what quality to work on each day. A person can create a log. And these things are definitely take you from the mental into the activity, because one can't work on oneself in one's head. Okay, by definition, it's like, yeah, I worked today, in my head I worked on kindness, and like, but then I acted like a jerk. So it's not possible. So the work itself definitely leads to an expression outside. It's just not as defined because it's personal, but it is nice to know that we're all working on the same thing. So let's take, for example, today of the Gevura in the Sphera of Tiferet. So the Sphera of Tiferet, which we said is about harmony and balance. So achieving harmony or balance in any relationship, in any situation, is always a delicate balance. And it's not just an automatic thing. There's not just a one place to be or one way to be in order to achieve that. It's going to depend on the people. It's going to depend on the situation. So this I read from Rabbi Goldfeder, who used to be the rabbi up at Eish Kodesh. Do you have that, his book? On it? Oh, it's very book. He has an Omer Counter book. It's really nice. And he talks about Gevura is about that being aware of how we are in any kind of a group, of whether sometimes what's necessary to achieve harmony or balance in a group is restraint on our part. That if we could come across and we are overbearing, and we don't have any boundaries on what we're doing or saying, it's not saying that we're doing anything wrong. It just may be that our presence, our personality, our whatever, in a certain group. Like what happens in a group when, let's say people are all out, employees are out for a drink after work, and then the boss comes by and sits down to have a drink with them as well. How's that gonna go? What happens to the dynamic of that group? You're just gonna have to throw it off balance. If it's going to work, the boss is going to have to do something to tzimtzum, to step back or create a way to say, in this environment, I'm like one of you, or do something, except if they do that too much, they could lose the respect of their employees, and it may not be a socially inappropriate thing to do. It's a very delicate thing. So when we talk about Gevura, is how are we, what is out the impact of us, our personality, our position, our authority? Maybe the person could be the nicest, nicest person in the world, but because of the role they play, it throws the dynamic off. It does something. Or some person may come in and they can be like, did you say they didn't even say anything? They just sat there like completely withdrawn. They didn't participate in creating the balance and the harmony. People don't realize that conversation is a back and forth. That, you know, you ask someone a question and say, oh, are you from New York? No. Hello? Like, you know, where are you from? You know, so what is it that there is a dynamic in every relationship that requires this balance of Gevura, of restraint, as well as of giving? In this case for today, it's about how might my presence be too much, and where do I need to do something to withdraw a little bit in just the right way so that it creates harmony or balance. And it could be the same way with ourselves, that our own personal inner relationship with ourselves. Am I too overbearing with myself? You know, if somebody who's hypercritical of themselves, me need to, like, you know what? relax a little bit. There may be too much gevura. So getting a handle on this quality is what we're trying to do today. And it's a good thing we only work on one thing at a time, because we can see that even working on one thing has myriad ramifications and impacts on all parts of our life. It's actually quite a big agenda. You could say, this is much harder than getting ready for Pesach. Pesach, I have my list from last year. Dust the, you know, whatever, clean out. That's easy because it's so physical and it's finite. And you can see it. I can tell when that room is done. Okay, kosher for Pesach. Myself, I'm never going to be done anyway. It's just a matter of making progress. But that's the other thing that we're told in this idea of expansiveness, that all the ability to improve ourselves, that there is no limit on what we can achieve, and that we shouldn't ever think that we've reached our maximum, that there's no limit to how much more effective we can be in our chesed, in our loving kindness, of reaching the right amount. There's no limit to our potential to have the right amount of gevura, the right amount of restraint, definition, respect. There's no limit to that. There's no limit to how much harmony we can create in our lives. There's no limit to how much, you know, endurance we can create in our lives of different things that we need to have be focused and established. There's no limit to any of these things. That's the ultimate expansiveness. That's the ultimate expansion that we are focusing on of what human potential is. That is how we are like God. Says God is unlimited, but God is already at the unlimited place, the whatever infinite means that we can't really grasp. We are a shadow of that. We are B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God, in that we also have infinite potential. If we were immortal, we would be able to maybe reach it. But we have, God willing, 120 years to work on the process. But all those qualities are called qualities that are like God. God's chesed, God's gevura, God's tiferet, God's netzach, God's hod. We refer to that when we take the Torah out and we sing, Lecha Adonai ha-gedula, v'ha-gevura, v'ha-tiferet, v'ha-netzach, v'ha-hod. We go through what are called the central five sfirot and talk about, say, those, God, are your qualities. You're not limited to those qualities. That's how we experience our relationship with you. And we are now saying, and we want to be like you, because we want to take the radiance of what you give us, grow it, and become gadol, like gadel means to grow, and put it all together and reflect back in the world exactly the same thing, to be like God. So to be godlike, again, is not to be... to have a sense of a holier than thou. It means to reflect back these qualities. In the counting of the Omer, the Jewish people have the opportunity during this month, especially this month of Ziv, that we're going from the time after Pesach, this month of Iyar, to reach this state. There's another idea that we talked about, this is a very important to have the progress and the order. So we take the order that we had for our Seder, which means order. That nobody searched for the Afikoman at the, no matter how tired the kids were, nobody searched for the Afikoman before the dinner or before the Seder got started. Like, I have to find it right now. Nobody did that. Everybody is like, even if it got condensed, it stayed in order. So the order of the Seder is also talking to us about there's an order and a progression in and a process in how we work on ourselves. Nobody's expecting instant results, that we're looking to have a progression. We're looking to go up the ladder. The idea of this as well is interesting in the word Omer, which is spelled Ayin Mem Resh. So another idea it's close to a gematria, it's related to that. So there is a way of looking at letters of what order, where they are in the order of the Aleph Bet. Which makes sense to look at the word Omer in that way, because we're talking about order and doing things in a progression and in a sequence. So the letter Ayin is the 16th letter of the Aleph Bet. So you can keep track of the numbers because we're going to add them together. The letter Mem is equal to 13. And the letter Resh is equal to... The letter Resh is the 20th letter of the Aleph Bet. So we have the 16th letter, the 13th letter, and the 20th letter. And we end up with our magical, wonderful number again of 49. So we're counting the Omer, which itself is a word that is has this gematria connection of 49. We're trying to work on our the midah, and notice it's also in the singular, that we don't try to say, I'm working on all of my midos. If someone says, I'm working on my whole self, you can bet they're not doing anything, because it's not possible to do that. It is possible. The truth is, it's kind of like cleaning. When I say I'm cleaning my house, if I say that to you ever, that means I'm not cleaning my house. If I say I'm cleaning the oven, then you know I'm cleaning the oven. But if somebody's saying I'm doing something globally, they're thinking globally, but what's the rest of that phrase? Act locally. Okay, so I may be working on everything. That's my goal. My goal is that. But unless I'm doing a something on a particular time and I'm working on a midah for the day, that's how I get to my 49, is that's how I'm going to get someplace. And that's our goal. So God willing, the rest of the month of Iyar, that we're starting today, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and on Rosh Chodesh we know that the spiritual light is where it comes into our life, that we should all benefit and remember the radiance, the ziv that we received and achieved, we received on Pesach, and that we take the 49 days to achieve for ourselves so that we have true ownership to make ourselves truly great, a gadol. Just as an aside to conclude, the opposite of gadol is katan, and the root of the word katan is kata, and kata means, just like the English cut, it means cut, fragmented, not connected to one another. That's what the word is of katan. So a person who is a katan is someone who's just kind of doing their, you know, whatever whim comes their way, just like what little kids do. Whatever comes into their mind, they just do. And it's like that's what they're supposed to do when they're little. But when you say grow up already, it means bring it all together and have a sense of balance, harmony, focus, and direction that we're trying to achieve. So we start out as the katans at Pesach, and our goal is to reach, to become a gadol by Shavuot. We see this in the astrological signs as well, of the sign for Nisan, the sign for Iyar, and the sign for Sivan. That in Nisan, the sign is the lamb, the ram. Thank you. And Taurus, that we know is the month of Iyar, is the ox or the bull that represents a strength and more. What do lambs do? Nobody puts a lamb to work, a ram to work. It's like they're just there. They're just there. An ox, you harness, because that you put to work. It says that's what we're doing, is putting ourselves to work and harnessing ourselves to achieve something. An ox has tremendous power and can achieve great goals. And then in Sivan is the twins. That's when we get to people. So in Rosh Chodesh Sivan, then we're starting, like we've gone from lamb, ram, one of those kind of animals, to an ox of harnessing ourselves. Say, what did you get when you harnessed yourself? You turned yourself into a real person. And that's what we get in the month of Sivan. So all of these things are pointing in the direction to tell us exactly what the tremendous potential is. We should all be blessed that the Ziv HaOlam, the radiance of the world that we received, that we should grow it, expand it, and reflect it and refract it back to everyone we know in our own lives and the lives of the world. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you. Oh, yes. Can I pass it around real quickly if you don't mind? Thank you. Did I bring it? I know I did. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. University Hospital. Just like people close. I'm going to go to the next one.
Thank you.
Milton class.
You're welcome.
No. Okay, what I'm asking now.
I tried. Yeah, I had it so loose. He's like a very spiritual man.
He is.
Yeah, I got the impression he's very spiritual.
Yes.
She wants to go Indian. You want to go Indian? Well, she has a different issue today. She bought a house. Sorry.
Okay, so how about
something close? So something like right where are you getting from here?
His girlfriend, Karen, she's a woman.
She had to buy all of her stuff.
No, she was in the conscience of her brother.
Sewer lines.
Should we go together, or what's the address so I can figure out how to do it? Yeah, she's been in a new place for a while.
I have to get all this stuff. Where's another school?
I wanted to ask you. Oh, yeah. Maybe you're in my computer.
Yeah. So,
but I kept in mind.
Okay, I'm gonna go.
I mean, I got some shopping and I did simple French.
And then I say.
It's going very natural.
Right.
Oh, yes. We were doing pretty well. Last time I spoke to Adam, he says for all the people on the list aren't there. I mean, it was the more.
Yeah, sorry, no.
It feels very.
I tried to use it when they do Thursday Sunday.
I know, me too.
I was thinking, I was like, I could make a class. I think it's Thursday meeting.
So that you were talking about.
And then he left the house.
It's a weird thing, right? Thank you.
It would be at their house.
Not necessarily. Depends, because my mother-in-law is probably going to go into the
party. What day of the week is this?
It's a Tuesday.
Okay.
So far.
Yes.
Great.
Or that he told exactly what it said.
Well, that's like a broken ship for that.
Yeah.
Well, that he told Moses.
Yeah, but it's exactly.